feels that I have grown up, I have my own point of view, I have my own opinion, I have a logic, while right. others still do not sense that growth in this person, the boy or the girl, and right. end up treating him like a child, treating her like a child who's less than teen. So they still feel that, oh, he's just a kid, and then right. their behavior towards them is like, you're just a kid, while he is now establishing his identity. And he's like, no, I'm not a kid. I have my own opinion.
Right? In his eyes, he's grown up.
Exactly. I right. have my own ideology. I have my own established worldview. And I am trying to operate through that. While the others look at them like, you know, oh, you're just a child, and does not give importance right. to his words.
They belittle him.
Right. They belittle him, or does not give importance to his words, ideas, point of view, opinion. That is when you will see that the switch gets flipped right. and they're like, no, why are you not listening to me? I have a point of view. I have a right. something to share, and I feel it's valuable. And for the grown-ups, it's like, oh, it's not valuable. Been there, right. done that.
And of
it's
course,
just a petty thing.
These teenagers, they do not express these thoughts that you said, that I right. also have an opinion, I also grown up. They express it with anger.
Exactly.
With frustration, with talking back, with disrespect, and so on.
Because they don't know, they still haven't learned the right kind of phrase or the terminology right. to say that, no,
also,
this is my point
feeling.
Of view.
Some
this is my
strange
exactly,
sensation.
Exactly. More than that, they don't know how to express it back and tell them that, look, this is my point of view. I believe
manner.
In it.
Right.
I have faith in it. I'm convinced about it. They can't say that because they've not learned how to tell right. this. So how they react is like, oh, you don't care for me. You don't love me. Right. You don't believe me. You don't respect
I'm
me.
I'm going to run away from home now.
Exactly. And all these words,
right.
you don't believe me. You don't respect me. You don't care for me, are basically pointing out that you don't respect my point of view. You don't respect my opinion. You don't believe that I have right. done some homework and research. And what I'm saying is backed by some research and...
not only that, effort. Even adults, if they feel that their opinions are not valued...
They do the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. With that, let's go ahead and take a quick break, dear Sheikh.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Now, Sheikh, just before we went on a break, we said that one of the reasons that teenagers react this way is because that they feel that their opinions and feelings are not valued.
Correct. So here we were talking about that one of the reasons why things seem to be a little uphill for the teenagers and right. they react is because they don't have the right choice of words to tell the people around them that, look, I am growing up and I have an identity, I have a personality.
No teenager would say that. It's a strange, right?
It's, yeah. Because he doesn't know the right kind of words.
Right.
Because
yeah.
he's now coming out of that childhood from that tween right. stage into teenage. It is only when he reaches 17, 18, and 19, that is when he knows.
When he's cooled off.
He's cooled off
or
he's heard enough people and he realizes that right. if I want to put across a point, I have to put it across this way.
So of course the parents, they should be the ones to understand
teach the child, especially
so
when he's 13, right. 14, 15 yeah. and 16, teach him the right choice of words,
right.
teach him how to respond and react. There's a difference between response and reaction.
Just like when a child, a toddler, his parents take him to the doctor. The doctor asks, where is the pain? And he points at his head, at his finger.
Correct.
Express yourself.
Self, right.
What kind of pain? Is it a numbing pain?
Correct.
Is it a tingling? And so on and so forth.
Exactly.
Right.
So I was talking about there's a difference between response and reaction.
Right.
Reaction is where you do not think. You just... there's an outburst of
right.
emotion.
It's a quick reaction. No thought process.
No thought processing.
Right.
Response is where you pause, you think, and you choose the right set of words to deliver the message
right.
that you exactly wanted to deliver. It's
right.
the parents' responsibility to teach the teenagers, 13, 14, 15, and 16, how to respond, to provide a response and not a reaction.
Right.
Because if they don't teach the child, the child would always react. Because
completely reactive, no exactly. thought process. Right.
And this is there's another element. Now the child, this person is coming out of childhood and entering into teenage, and he's going through physical changes, hormonal changes, and there are a lot of changes happening.
Right.
And emotional changes. Now he is feeling and sensing certain emotions which he never used to feel or sense earlier.
Right. Yeah.
Now this is where the parents have to work hand in hand with this teenage boy or girl at home. They cannot treat him like a child. So let's say when he was 6 years old, 7 years old, he would come back from school and the parent would say, go to room, change your clothes, keep your bag, come down, have lunch. Now, right. this teenage comes from school or college and you say, go to room, change your clothes, keep your bag, come down and have lunch. He's like,
I'm what? Not a child.
Exactly.
Right.
This is his precise response. I'm not a child anymore.
Right.
You can't talk to me like that. Right. So which means that you'll have to use yourself as a parent, the right words, the choice of words, and then manage this kind of a scenario. Let's come back from the break and I'll tell you that when this person comes back
right.
from
Let's
the school.
Let's go ahead and take a break and we'll circle back, inshallah.
Ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Dear Sheikh, please pick up where you left off.
Yeah, so we were talking about this teenage person coming back from school, right?
Right, the scenario.
The
right.
scenario where he's, you know,
instructed
tired.
Like a child, like a toddler would be instructed.
Right. So he's already tired from the school. He's
right.
gone through difficult subjects. For a child, the subjects and the intensity is different
right.
compared
yeah.
to a person who's
of
at
course.
The teenage
the
level.
The mental stress and all that. Right.
And particularly maths and science, challenging subjects. His head is exploding.
Right.
He's struggling to solve that content in his head. Tired, sat in the bus, and you never know, maybe bullied in the school, really, we don't
well.
Know what's happening.
Yeah.
So now he's home, and then he's super tired, and then they're like, go to room, change your clothes, put your bag.
And he's belittled.
And like, what? I'm not doing
right.
any of that. You need to have lunch. Everyone's down here for lunch. Come down. He's like, I don't want to have lunch. No
right.
Interest in food.
He lashes
I'm not
out.
Hungry at
right.
all. Right. So this is like snapping at the parents. Whereas the parents need to manage the scenario properly. They should say, oh, you look tired, all right? Take a break, sit down and relax, have some water, have, you know, some, you know, a drink or whatever, you know, juice or whatever.
Right.
And then in 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, let's come together for lunch. The child
right.
is going to behave differently here because he sees that my parents
are understanding.
Understanding
right.
and they look at me, they understand what I'm going through and they're able to relate to me. And
well,
that's what makes
right.
the difference.
It shouldn't be such a strange thought that we, when we say to parents, treat your children that way, because it is the same thing that parents also want. Like when the father comes home from work, tired, exhausted, the last thing he wants is a wife or children who nag on him, who want things from like, oh, we forgot this from the grocery store, go
exactly.
get it.
Or dictate terms to him,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
So he doesn't want that.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the point I was trying to make, that they are now trying to establish an identity for themselves.
Right.
They're trying to establish that I am a person, I have my own
right.
thoughts, I have my own ideas, I have my own needs. Why don't you respect that?
Right.
I am tired. Respect that, right? So
right.
when parents look at the child, the teenage in this way, and like, okay, take a break, not important, keep your bag here, relax. Some parents are very strict. The moment this person comes home, put your bag, go for namaz.
It's like their servants.
More than that, even
right.
in the religious point of view, put your bag, go for namaz. You know,
go
offer
pray.
Salat, go
right.
pray. When the moment you say that, there is a backfire and
the
person starts disliking the prayers.
Of
right?
course, yeah.
So this is where the parents have to know and learn how to manage the scenario.
Right. We said earlier that the teenager, he lashes out aggressively because he cannot express himself. That also applies to the adults when they want to order their children. You shouldn't order them.
Use the right choice of words.
Right.
Package it well. Package
yeah.
it well. and then give them the option of choice.
Give them a choice.
So yeah, yeah. And then so let them cool down, and then let them have their lunch. There are times when the person is hungry. If he's hungry, whatever you tell him is going to backfire, right?
Yeah.
So let him have food. Let
hangry,
him relax.
As we say, and hungry
then,
and angry.
Yeah, yeah. And then you tell them that, okay, now go to your room, put your bag, change.
After he's
back,
relaxed,
yeah.
Cooled off, maybe
he slept. And then go and mow the lawn. So he's right. Going to listen to it, right?
Yeah, don't do it directly. Don't pile up exactly. All the tasks and chores. That's
exactly,
horrible.
Exactly.
I just came home. I want to relax now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So these are the scenarios.
Sheikh, what about parents who instruct or order their children to sleep at certain times? Like they have a sleep schedule. You sleep at 9, for example, and you must wake up at 6. Is that a good thing?
You can't force someone into sleeping, right? It's a very...
Oh, believe me, some people do.
It's like forcing someone to believe or forcing someone to fall in love. That's
right.
Not going to happen.
Right.
But it's a necessity to have a sleep cycle, a productive, a good quality sleep cycle.
Right.
Islam recommends that the first part of the night, especially after the sunset, let's say after sunset an hour or two,
right.
Particularly in the regions where the sunset is about 7 p.m., 6:45,
right.
7 p.m.,
right.
Let a couple of hours pass. So by 9 o'clock, the child should go to sleep. The teenager should go to sleep. Get 7 hours to 8 hours of sleep and then
right.
Wake up whatever time it is. But there are regions in the world where
right.
The sunset is 9:30, 10, 11.
Right, yeah.
There
early
again,
the
yeah. There right. Again, you know, get them to have the food and all that. And
right.
The moment it's sunset, offer namaz and then offer prayers.
So the important
prayers,
thing
then,
is that they sleep for 7 hours every day.
Yeah, minimum.
Right. And on that note, we will end today's program. I thank you for contributing to this discussion and also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback or some comments, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The 16th session of the Quds Conference for Palestinian Youth was held in Damascus. Participants discussed means of uniting Palestinians in service of their cause, hailing resistance operations in occupied Palestine and the people's uprising in the face of Israeli forces.
Our message at this conference is that Palestinian youth outside Palestine are present on the front lines, just like the youth in Quds, Gaza and the West Bank. Palestinians are uniting. The Sword of Palestine battle reflects this unity, and this conference is one of the results of that battle.
The conference is held in parallel with the International Al-Quds Day, which was set by late Imam Khomeini on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year.
The message of Iran on Quds Day is that the only path for regaining Palestinian rights is resistance against the crimes of the Zionist entity. The message of Quds International Day is Islamic unity in the face of Israeli crimes. The track of normalization will not affect regaining Palestinians' rights.
We as Palestinian, Syrian and Arab youth send a message to our people in Quds in Aqsa Mosque that we will support them until the liberation of Palestine, from the sea to the river. Thanks to the Resistance Alliance, today we are more capable of triumphing. And as Imam Khamenei said, Quds will remain the axis.
The final communique called for national unity among all Palestinian factions, as well as re-establishing the PLO with a national plan based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Events like this reiterate that Palestinian refugees across the world will never give up their right of repatriation. It's a message to Israel that their struggle will never stop until ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been re-elected in a comfortable victory, defeating the National Rally's Marine Le Pen, just like in 2017. 6 years after Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, France has still not had a shock victory which opposes right-wing economics and globalization. Macron's victory will be celebrated by high finance in Brussels and by the so-called bourgeois bloc, who are his core supporters. However, the Yellow Vests have said for months that they view a Macron victory as intolerable and as a call to social battle.
Ça veut dire qu'on aura fait trois ans de lutte.
We had 3 years of a struggle but couldn't get Macron out of power. It shows that there is no solution possible by the ballot, only on the streets. Many people will be quite desperate, so things could turn towards extreme social instability and maybe civil war.
Le Pen did see a major rise in support as compared with 2017, but the nationalist bloc still fell short. It seems that many voters simply could not vote in favor of even a rebranded National Front, whose far-right record goes back decades. Abstention hit 28%, the highest since 1969. Blank or purposely spoiled ballots are estimated to be an additional 12%. The populist bloc, who apparently wanted neither candidate, made their presence felt by denying Macron a convincing victory in terms of the overall electorate.
The biggest revolution to come will be philosophical and intellectual. We need a new way of thinking, a new way of being French, and we need a new France. With Le Pen or Macron, we were sure to lose our democratic rights and personal freedoms, and that's unacceptable to many.
Just like in 2017, Macron is likely to face calls that his victory is not a mandate for his proposed policies, such as raising the retirement age this fall. That means the country is likely to experience continued social unrest, which was unprecedented in Macron's first term. France's political future usually first surfaces in their neo-imperial colonies, like with the Yellow Vests. For the first time, the far right won most of France's overseas territories in what could be a preview of 2027. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Recent deadly attacks in Afghanistan have left Afghan families grieving. Some have lost their parents, and some their children. Here, we are meeting the family of Shahid Milad, who was killed in Tuesday's school bombing in Kabul. Milad's mother can't speak, as she is in a flood of tears, mourning the loss of her young son. But his disabled father managed to speak with great sorrow.
Milad was a very diligent boy. It was his last year at school. He was preparing himself to enter university. He used to tell me that he was going to become a doctor and make a living so that his father doesn't have to work. He wished to serve his family and society, but unfortunately they took him from us.
In another alley in Hazara neighborhood, another family is mourning the death of a father. After the attack on the school students, Mir Hussein went to bring his son home. But he himself fell victim to the second explosion.
My brother was on the roof when he heard a bomb explosion at the school. He quickly went to school to find his son Mahdi. He was searching around when the second explosion occurred. He was injured in the attack, but later at the hospital, we lost him forever.
Mahdi has survived the attack, but he is struggling with the shock of the attack and the pain of losing his father. Likewise, in the west of Kabul, there are many families whose beloved ones are either killed or wounded. They feel despaired and can't hold back their tears. It remains to be seen if the time can heal their wounds. These days, Afghan families want peace and security. People here say they're terrified of repeated blind terror attacks. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A big rally was held in the besieged Gaza Strip to support Al-Quds in the face of rising Israeli aggression against the Holy City. Thousands of people from all walks of life came out to express their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been on the rise in recent days as extremist Israeli settlers, backed by Israeli regime forces, desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries towards the Israeli crimes. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the Friday rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We will not leave Al-Quds as a prey for the Zionist enemy, and our people are united today in defending Al-Quds. The Palestinian resistance is very strong and will defend Al-Quds against Zionist attacks. Today's rally and the masses here are sending a strong message to the Zionist enemy. If these Zionist attacks against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque don't come to an end, our people will explode in the face of the Zionist entity.
Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, the Israeli forces and illegal settlers have been trying to prevent Palestinians from gathering and performing their religious duties at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here today to show our solidarity and support for Al-Quds in the face of Zionist aggressions. All Palestinian resistance groups are here to send a message of unity. We will spare no effort to protect Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to support the resistance and help us to protect Al-Quds and the Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians have expressed their willingness to sacrifice their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Islam's holy book, the Quran, is the theme of this expo. Held every year in the fasting month of Ramadan, the International Quran Exhibition opened its doors after 2 years of hiatus, driven by the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the 29th edition of the event has brought here exhibitors from Iran and other Muslim countries to present their religious products. While the expo displays exquisite copies of the Quran, it also gives a chance to IT firms to showcase online versions of the Holy Book, among other religious apps and software. The art section is one of the popular parts of the event. It features paintings, calligraphy works, and conceptual artworks, all themed with the Quran. The holy month of Ramadan is believed to be the month when the holy book of Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad some 14 centuries ago. That's why this exhibition is held during the holy month, which is also referred to as the month of Quran.
Every Muslim family has a copy of the Quran in their houses to read its verses and ponder its divine messages as many times as possible during the year, and especially in Ramadan, as the month of the Quran's revelation to the Prophet. Now, one of the major goals of this expo is to promote the instructions of the Divine Book, especially among the younger generation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain, and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
We people are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they're attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show our solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan, the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. It's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache for the Palestinians, it's difficult.
The unrest also sparked hostilities between Gaza-based Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces as the two sides exchanged fire early on Thursday. The lack of mainstream media attention, despite the shocking footage which has emerged, has equally infuriated many onlookers.
It's not just me. Every Palestinian have been hit with the fact that international law is very selective. The application of international law depends on the interests of these countries. And, you know, the major powers insist to keep putting Israel above the law, to keep shielding Israel from international scrutiny and international sanctions. And if this does anything, it actually exposes that the world is not serious about its own rules and laws.
This isn't the first time that the Israeli regime has conducted acts of aggression against Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan in occupied Palestine. However, global awareness of Israel's crimes is at an all-time high, and with future protest action planned over the next days and weeks here in London, the global reaction to what's been going on is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
Whispers with God on a night that's believed by Muslims to be a time when their wishes are fulfilled. It's called Laylatul Ghadr, or the Night of Destiny. Muslims observe the occasion every year in the month of Ramadan, when they congregate at religious sites to pray and make wishes. To Iranians, no place is better than the shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Reza in the city of Mashhad to keep vigil on the occasion.
Words cannot describe my feelings tonight. It's a night of destiny when God has promised to listen to our prayers. It's a night which the Quran says is better than 1,000 months. I'm so happy to be in Imam Reza's shrine on this divine night.
After 2 years, we once again can visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, our beloved Imam, and that on the night of destiny. I wish that God will eradicate the coronavirus once and for all, for us to be able to live peacefully and visit our holy sites.
Islamic scriptures say Laylatul Ghadr marks the night when the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. The Quran says on this night, angels descend on earth to listen to the prayers of worshippers.
We believe that on the night of destiny, angels come to earth upon God's order. The Quran says in its verses that the book was revealed to the Prophet on this night, and the angels will stay on earth till dawn. That's why we never miss out on this holy night and come here to pray.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, But all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's the first time after more than 2 years that the Night of Destiny is marked without serious concerns over the coronavirus. And this has attracted this huge number of pilgrims to the shrine of Imam Reza to once again mark Laylatul Qadr en masse and at the same time reunite with their eighth Imam after 2 years. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
Violence, oppression, and desecration of holy sites. Just more of the Ramadan reminders that Palestinians continue to live under occupation and suffer daily injustices. More than ever, international solidarity, especially in an age of social media, is important. With the atrocities being committed against Palestinians, raising awareness and exhibiting support is more crucial than before. This year's Fly the Flag for Palestine campaign is giving millions across the world the opportunity to show solidarity by displaying a Palestinian flag in person or online.
If we are not able to stand up at this hour of need and be supportive to those Palestinians by holding a flag on our car, on our shops, on our homes, then what are we good for? And when are we going to do this? And I think what I have seen, ordinary people responding so fantastically.
In the lead up to the annual Al-Quds rally in the British capital, the global support for the campaign is in full swing. Organizers are encouraging participation in this year's event, and taking part could not be more simple. First of all, please post your image or your footage online, encourage a few friends to do the same, and of course, use the hashtag. As the global solidarity movement grows, so does the opposition, a fact not lost on pro-Palestine campaigners.
We got ministers coming and saying, you know, they're going to refer us to the police for saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's outrageous. These are the same people that actually articulate that freedom of speech is absolute, and you know they go on and on. What's wrong with any part of the world to be free? What's wrong with asking people to be free?
So organizers are urging you to do your part. Lift your voice in solidarity and fly the flag for Palestine. Amina Taylor, London.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Quds Day, Israel's days are numbered. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The main cause of crisis in West Asia is the cancerous tumor called Israel. The fabricated regime of Israel declared existence in 1948. The regime has continued crimes against the Palestinian nation ever since. Israel has made millions of Palestinians homeless and jailed thousands of them and martyred scores of thousands of others. The Zionist regime intensified its brutal attacks against the owners of the land since the notorious supercriminal Ariel Sharon went to the state of coma. The fake regime keeps devastating the infrastructures of Palestine and bulldozing the homes and hearths of the people to make conditions insecure for them. Now, can the conscience of wakeful people keep silent? Palestine is the land in the world where human rights are violated around the clock. But the so-called defenders of human rights and international organizations have kept silent towards heinous crimes of the Zionist regime. The silence has emboldened Israel to continue killing of innocent people. Moreover, even if a resolution is ratified against the Zionist regime in the UN, the United States of America wields the law of jungle illegally called as veto right and gives green light to the illegitimate regime in Tel Aviv to further murder Palestinian women and children and demolish their homes and hearths. Why should the U.S. give billions of dollars annually to Israel to kill Palestinians? Why should Washington aid and abet the fake regime with arms and equipment to massacre Palestinians? Why should Israel own the only atomic arsenal in West Asia? Which nation is it going to annihilate with those nuclear bombs? Why should Palestine be under the constant siege of the Zionist military? Why should the so-called international community turn a blind eye and deaf ear to this indescribable volume of crimes by the Zionist regime and force over 2 billion Muslims to tolerate Israel, which was born on crime and genocide? Are the Palestinians not allowed to even shout against the violation of all their rights? Shouldn't they take recourse to public uprising to defend their legitimate rights? While all global bodies are tacitly asleep against this much of crimes, there is no other choice for the Palestinian nation to show their wrath. While the Zionist and U.S.-controlled media do not want to distinguish between defenseless people and terrorists and call Palestinian children and youth as terrorists, why should the oppressed Palestinians do? The UN and its affiliated bodies are all puppets in the hands of the Zionist regime and its comrades in crime, especially the US. In 2006, the UN Security Council, in spite of the demand of the Lebanese government and the world people, refused to hold a mission to stop the Israeli attacks on Lebanon. This gave time to the criminal Israeli military to devastate all infrastructures of Lebanon and make over 1 million people homeless. Only when the Zionist regime announced that there is no military solution against Hezbollah, the UNSC issued a resolution and that to further pressure Lebanon. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said the consecutive defeats of the American in Lebanon, Iraq, Syria and Palestine indicate the might of the resistance front. This development has created changes in the political map of the region, has led to independence from the West, and has raised a promising Islamic view. Today, the axis of resistance has expanded from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean, all through Ansarullah in Yemen to Hezbollah in Lebanon. The Lebanese Islamic resistance possesses great reserves of various kinds of short-range and medium-range missiles. These missiles are radar-evasive and pinpoint. Thus, the entire occupied territories are under the fire of these missiles, and this is why they have caused and unending nightmare for Israel. Hezbollah has also gained access to high capabilities in the field of drones, cyber war, and electronic war. These factors of power cause Israel to regret any aggression, as the response will be much more crushing than the previous ones. However, the world people, particularly Muslims, do not want to be mere onlookers of crimes and acts of terror by Israeli military against a Palestinian nation. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, anyone who wakes up while feeling no responsibility towards the affairs of Muslims is not a Muslim. Imam Khomeini, as the reviver and main supporter of the Palestinian cause, showed the Quranic view to all seekers of freedom and peace in the world. He declared the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day to urge Muslims to defend the oppressed people of Palestine through demonstrations and rallies. Over four decades ago, when the world Muslims numbered more than 700 million, the Imam said, if each Muslim pours one bucket of water, Israel will be drowned. Imam Khomeini's initiative has made Muslims more united and has created a nightmare for the Zionist occupiers of Palestine and the first Qibla of Islam, the Holy Quds. It has breathed new spirit in the Palestinian cause and given hope to the young generation in Palestine to pursue their forgotten rights with no fear of losing their life.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamadi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. How are you? I hope wherever you are, you're fine and you're doing well. In case you're not doing well in this holy land, we pray for your well-being, inshallah. You are listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station. I am your host, Zainab Askari, and I have with me today a very special guest. She's also Zainab, so we have two Zainabs here.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Zainab Mousavi, and today I have the privilege of participating in this beautiful and nice discussion.
So Zainab, you as youth, what do you think about modern life?
Well, and let it put it in other words, what is modern life?
Yeah, okay.
You know, modern life is a life, in my opinion, that is mixed and that is so combined with technology and with materialistic views that is somehow, some might regard this change as a good thing, and some others, some older people might think that is it is not good, but some young people who like changes.
What do you as youth think about that?
I personally prefer some aspects of it. You know, not wholly, but some aspects of this modern life is definitely useful for me. The thing I like about my modern life is the ability to communicate with people all over the world.
Okay.
You know, which was impossible years ago. But now, all I have to do is to pick up my cell phone and go on the application and make a call with my friend who lives in the other side of the world.
Life has become easy.
Yes, definitely.
But you just said that I just like some parts of it. Why some?
Some parts, you know.
Why not all? Like, are you tired of it somehow?
Yes, yes, really? In some aspects, yes.
Okay.
And I think some people might have their opinions might be just like me, because we cannot neglect the disadvantages of modern life, influences that it might have on our souls and our lives. The thing I mostly love and hate about modern life, cell phones and social media are the words that are inevitable to use. Somehow, most of our lives is involved with these concepts.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
What do you think about modern life, and which aspects of it are more important for you?
See, I think everything has a bright side and everything has a dark side. It's like since history, everything has had a bright and a dark side. And in terms of modern life, the more advantages it has given you, at the same time, it has had the bad parts as well. So if you talk about the good parts of it, I think the good parts is the same one, like you said, like we are far away. I'm far away from my family. I'm living so much miles far away from my family. But with the tech, with the modern life, I'm able to talk to them every day. I'm able to see them every day. But the bad part of it is that the relationships have become superficial more. There's time pressure. There's, and why? Because, you know, you talked about social media. You talked about the cell phones. You talked about the applications that give us access to talk to our loved ones and all. But at the same time, you know, you never post stories when you're sad. You always post good things. You know, when you're happy,
yes,
you're enjoying.
It's not real. It's not true.
No. Even if it's true, like, you mostly try to post things when you are happy. You never post things when you are like down, extremely down, when you're not feeling well. And when others come and see your stories, they may develop some jealousy.
Yes.
How come this person is always happy?
Yes.
How come this person is always like, you know, flying on the cloud
like
nine?
Like at my life.
Yeah. Because that person, other people are surrounding you, only know you through your stories now.
Yes.
They don't know you like they, people
they
no
don't
more
go
visit.
Deeper inside you. Yes.
Yeah, people no more visit each other. People no more go to each other's homes and places and see them physically. One hug of your mother or sister relieves a lot of hell, a lot of stress. And since, because of this modern life, I say, I just talked to my mother yesterday, today. Yeah. I don't need to go and see her physically.
But you cannot hug her.
I cannot hug her. So yes, it has distanced me. It has created some artificial kind of relationship. So modern life has, yes, got its own pros and its own cons.
As you, of course, just mentioned, some people go to the social media, as you said, that they focus on other people's life. And on the other hand, we have people who pretend to be something else on social media.
Exactly.
They pretend
to
be
Musk.
Wealthy. Yes, yes. They pretend to be wealthy. They pretend to be happy, to be even in love in some cases. The woman loves her husband so much. And the other women, when they watch the posts belonging to such issues, they come to think that, okay, why my husband does not love me that
or
much.
Or care about me
he
that
doesn't,
much.
Yes, he doesn't show his love to me.
But you know, sometimes there are cases like, you know, people post about things like, for example, somebody's husband gave her a surprise on her birthday or something.
Yes, people that's come quite and, common.
People come and start posting. At the same time, you have a husband who is not expressing, but he's most loving. Maybe he's most loving than the person who gave surprise to someone.
Yes.
But he's least expressive. But these posts are creating an environment. They're creating an environment of jealousy. Don't you think so?
Yes, definitely. That's right. And I truly believe in what you say. And that kind of jealousy influences our lives as people who live in the real world, not in the world of social media.
You said that technology has connected us. Modern life has made our life easier. But yes. Do you think it has made us isolated as well?
Although we're connected with one another, the relation is superficial. It is not that much real. As just you said, you had the experience of talking to your mother and sister, for example. And you said that you just talk to them. You do not hug them. You cannot hug them. You cannot feel them near yourself. All these things makes people who are naive to complain about their real life, they're living it, and to compare their lives with those lies.
True.
Lies just shown on the screen of their cell phones.
Yeah.
And I like the hadith, the narration from one of our
noble imams.
Yes. Who said that we must look at people who are not wealthier, who are poorer than us.
Okay.
And, you know, this kind of view helps us a lot.
And don't you think the holy month of Ramadan gives us a beautiful concept of the same thing, to practice the same thing?
Yes, about eating or not, about being thirsty or not. Yes, the holy month of Ramadan definitely teaches us to
feel the hunger.
Yes.
Feel the thirst, yes, of those who are hungry around the world.
Yes.
You know, there are so many people around in the war zones especially who are in need of humanitarian aid, who are in need of assistance. And the Islam has got this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing, the month of Ramadan.
Yes.
In which, like, you know, we have this concept of feeling the hunger. It is not, like, I personally think that Ramadan does not come to tell you and teach you to punish you some way, you know, to put some pressure on you and to keep you away from eating and drinking. The actual concept is to control.
Self-control.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, you're definitely
right. I just want luxurious foods. I just want luxurious dresses. I just want luxurious. Everything I want is high and high and high. From this hadith, you reminded me of the thing. We always expect higher level. We never compare ourselves with the people who don't have. Don't have at all. For example, if I'm eating normal, I always have these complaints. Why I'm eating this? I never know. There are people who don't eat at all, who don't have even this.
And so it's
if you want to compare,
Islam
very rightly teaches you, compare yourself with those who don't have.
Who don't have, yes. Exactly. And in that way, you would just thank God for what you have.
Exactly.
And you would realize how great is the blessings that are around you. And you know, you're healthy, you're having a family, you're living in a place that is safe, and there's no war in the place you're living. All of these things are things that we might neglect and we might just forget about them. Although you correctly mentioned the effects of month of Ramadan on eating or on drinking, but this hadith gives us
broader concept,
much broader view in our whole life, in whatever choices we make in our lives. And as I just put it to the social media,
especially to the women, they're always comparing themselves. Comparing themselves, yes, they are.
Just so correctly that unfortunately there are people, and unfortunately there are women who just try to compare themselves. They're so naive in some cases that they believe what they see on the screen of their cell phones, and
it's truth.
They believe that it is true, and so they lack something in their lives. So they have to compare themselves with other people who they do not have much information about their true life.
Exactly.
Yes, and
so I think there is the need of media readiness. Like, we need to be guided.
Informed.
We need to have media literature.
Yes.
So not to accept everything what we are seeing or hearing.
We must take courses of social media. Every person who takes a cell phone in his or her hand must have the information about how to deal with the world of social media.
Yeah. So, Zainab, coming out of the social media life, what do you think are the other effects of tech? I mean, for example, we as females like to help our mothers in the home. We use vacuum cleaners. We use the automatic machines.
We wash the dishes.
We do so much stuff. But the more tech has come, but the more we have, been subjected to the modern life, do you think it has negative effects even there? Though it has some advantages, but do you think like our physical activity or something has gone less the more we are, the more we are attached to the modern life?
You know, these equipments make life easier for us. That's a fact which cannot be denied.
There's no doubt about that.
Yes, undoubtedly, such a thing exists. But the point is that when we do not spend much of our time doing domestic chores, we must take advantage of our time. We must use our time in the best way possible. For example, when I put my dishes in the washing machine, and I go and lean on the sofa playing with my cell phone, watching those social media, those fake lives of social media.
Okay.
Or no, should I go and read a book? Or should I just go and exercise? Should I work on my mentality?
Well, whatever we should do, whatever we should do behind after that, like since I have put some of my dishes into the dishwashing machine and then I am, whatever I'm doing is the second part of the story. But here I think the same thing, like the physical activity you used to do that used to keep you physically fit is now making you lazier day by day because of this equipment, the more equipments you're using.
Yes, you're right. And that could be.
You were doing exercises naturally. These traditional things we had used to keep you physically much, much fit.
Involved, yes.
Much, much
healthier.
Fit. Yeah,
yes.
Healthier.
Yes,
because,
you're right.
Because you were physically involved. Your physical activity was high. Your active life was high. But I think these days,
people in the past who did not enjoy this equipment, they were much healthier.
Yeah. So apart from the social media stuff, apart from the equipment at home, I also think that these techs, these whatever the technology we are using, we are using a lot of cars, we are using a lot of vehicles, we are destroying the environment as well. So we have to keep ourselves physically active if we are using the tech, we are using the modern equipment in our home, and we need to try to overcome the cons of tech. Thank you so much,
Zainab,
for being with us. Thank you, dear listeners. You were listening to the IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.